This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, strategic implications of the Trump administration's decision to withdraw troops from Syria and abandon America's longtime Kurdish allies. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. A phone call between U.S. President Donald Trump and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan on Sunday, October 6, set in motion a series of stunning events that analysts say have scrambled alliances, undermined America's credibility as an ally, and reversed progress in defeating the so-called Islamic State. In that fateful call earlier this month, President Trump told President Erdogan that he would not interfere with a planned Turkish offensive in northern Syria, which prompted Trump to announce the abrupt withdrawal of 1,000 U.S. troops, leaving allied Kurdish forces to the mercy of Ankara, which considers them a terrorist group. President Trump reportedly ignored advice from senior defense and military commanders who argued against the move, which also astonished foreign policy experts and drew criticism from Democratic and Republican lawmakers alike. The House of Representatives voted 354-60 to condemn the abrupt withdrawal of U.S. troops, saying it benefits the governments of adversary nations, including Syria, Iran, and Russia. In 2014, when the so-called Islamic State captured large swaths of territory in Syria and Iraq, the Kurds emerged as one of the few Syrian armed groups consistently able to take on the extremists. The Kurdish militias, known as the People's Protection Unit, or YPG, formed the backbone of the Syrian Democratic Forces, who worked alongside U.S. forces and drove IS out of northern Syria. The Kurds, who lost 11,000 troops in the process, saw Trump's actions to greenlight Turkey's incursion as nothing short of betrayal. However, Ankara has consistently opposed the presence of the Kurdish YPG forces within the SDF near its border with Syria. Turkey considers the YPG a terrorist group aligned with the Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK, that has been fighting Ankara for decades. Analysts say that President Trump makes matters worse with his unserious and unsubstantiated justifications. He tweeted this month, quote, "After defeating 100% of the ISIS caliphate, I largely moved our troops out of Syria. Let Syria and Assad protect the Kurds and fight Turkey for their own land." He went on to say, "Anyone who wants to assist Syria in protecting the Kurds is good with me, whether it's Russia, China, or Napoleon Bonaparte," unquote. In fact, experts say that ISIS, also known as Daesh in Arabic, is one of the big winners in the aftermath of the U.S. withdrawal. They say that Mr. Trump's U.S. pullout has handed them their biggest win in more than 4 years. As for the Kurds, leaving them to the fate of Russia, Syria's Bashar al-Assad, with whom they made an alliance of convenience after the U.S. pullout, or Turkey, can only accentuate their vulnerability. Senate Majority Leader Republican Mitch McConnell, who rarely diverges on policy from President Trump, said in an opinion editorial, quote, "Withdrawing U.S. forces from Syria is a grave strategic mistake. It will leave the American people and homeland less safe, embolden our enemies, and weaken important alliances," unquote. Well, with us to discuss the strategic and regional ramifications of the U.S. withdrawal from Syria and subsequent Turkish incursion are two distinguished analysts. Henri Barki is Cohen Professor of International Relations at Lehigh University and Senior Fellow for Middle East Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. And Aykan Erdemir, he's Senior Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. That's a think tank here in Washington. He's a former member of the Turkish Parliament, serving from 2011 to 2015. He has been at the forefront of the struggle against religious persecution, hate crimes, and hate speech in Turkey. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Henri Barki, let me begin with you. How damaging, in your view, is the fallout from the U.S. withdrawal from Syria, having ceded ground to enemies like Russia, Bashar al-Assad, and Iran, and then allowing a NATO ally, Turkey, to basically attack U.S. ally, the Kurds, who bore the brunt of the fight against ISIS in Syria?
Well, it's hard to find a beginning to this question, in the sense that this is probably one of the biggest self-inflicted policy nightmares that the United States has ever engaged in the sense that there was a system in northeast Syria that was designed to stop ISIS. ISIS was not completely defeated because ISIS could go underground. There are also thousands of ISIS prisoners that the Kurds hold, whose fate remains unknown. And so essentially what President Trump did was to give northern Syria to the Russians, to the Syrians, and to the Turks, and essentially also create the conditions under which ISIS can reemerge. And in the process, of course, Turkish army has brought with it in tow large number of jihadist elements, locals who the Turks train, but are, from the videos and everything else we've seen, behave more like Al-Qaeda or ISIS elements than a regular army. And they have inflicted amazing damage on the civilian population in northeastern Syria. We have probably 200,000 internally displaced people from northern Syria, and that number is going to increase as the Turks consolidate their position. But strategically speaking, we have allowed Russia to now assume greater control of Syria. Trump may not care about this, but the rest of the world cares about it.
Turning to you, Aykan Erdemir, for your take. Of course, the United States had so few troops there to begin with, and their very presence was really critical to this delicate balance of keeping IS at bay and protecting the Kurds who were allied with the United States. Why do you think President Trump did this? I mean, we know he tends to like dictators. He never says a bad word regarding Vladimir Putin. Some say maybe it's just politics of 2020. He wants to appeal to his base, and he has promised them that he's going to bring, you know, troops back and end so-called endless wars. I mean, what's the motivation here?
I think President Trump is an isolationist at heart, and he has always been planning to disengage from overseas deployments. And this was probably the worst place to start that withdrawal. Why? Because ultimately, this is a self-defeating move, even for Trump's own worldview. Trump, without realizing, was successfully building a new model of engagement in the Middle East. This was the leanest, the most cost-effective, and successful engagement the U.S. had in decades. It relied heavily on local partners, where they did the heavy lifting, and only 1,000 to 2,000 U.S. special forces basically helped turn the tide of the war against the Islamic State, kept Russia and Iran out, and kept the Assad regime out. But more importantly, U.S. managed to help build inclusive institutions in the Middle East, where ethnic and religious minorities are always at risk. U.S. helped build a model with the political wing SDC and with the military wing SDF. Syrian Arabs, Syrian Kurds, Syriac Christians, Yazidis, Turkmen, and the new flourishing Protestant churches. You know, all of them came together, definitely with shortcomings. But at least if you compare them to what was there before under the Islamic State, this was a remarkable transformation of northeast Syria. This was a remarkably lean model that not only provided security, but also a slow, gradual, but consistent path to building an inclusive and secular polity, a secular governance model in the Middle East. And I think President Trump has just robbed himself of what could have been his biggest victory. This could have been the Trump doctrine. This could have been the lean and effective way of engaging with the world. And now here he is, not only an isolationist, but I think also one of the biggest losers of the big power game in the Middle East.
So turning back to you, Henri Barki, so why do you think President Trump basically ceded to Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey with Turkey's invasion? We know that the Turks, particularly this regime, has a hard time with the Kurds. There's so much hostility. They have a problem in Turkey that they need to resolve because Kurds are part and parcel of the nation, but they're also a nation among nations, and particularly in Syria and Iran and in Iraq. Could there have been something short of this Turkish offensive? Could the United States, the Kurds, and Turkey have reached some kind of consensus, the creation of a safe zone, in your view?
Well, we really do not know why President Trump took that decision. We do know that he wanted to do exactly the same thing back in December 2018, And he essentially was stopped by the U.S. military and civilian bureaucracy. If you remember, Secretary of Defense Mattis resigned in a very public way. But within the Department of Defense, all the American institutions, there was a pushback. And at the time, you had also very seasoned people at the head of these institutions. Not only did you have Mattis, but you also had Bolton, the National Security Advisor. He was quite adept at maneuvering the U.S. government. You had General Dunforth as the Joint Chiefs, and General Votel as the commander of Central Command, who controls the troops in Syria. All of these people could essentially push back on Trump. But if you look at what happened now, you had a brand new Secretary of Defense, Esper, who had been on the job only 2 months. You had a new National Security Advisor who knows very little about foreign policy, had been on the job for 2 weeks, a new Joint Chiefs, and a new commander for Central Command in the Middle East. So you did not have a very strong group of people who would push back. But fundamentally, again, the issue is, why would he want to give Erdogan such a victory? Senator Romney has suggested that there may be business dealings that Trump is interested in Turkey. There are Trump Towers. I don't know, but there is no question that Trump likes Erdogan, wanted to be forthcoming towards Erdogan. And also, he's been rolled not just by Erdogan, but many leaders in the world, Putin included. Trump is not prepared when he goes into meetings. He knows very little about the environment or the local conditions. So basically, you see him ending up repeating the talking points of the adversary. You asked whether or not there could have been another deal. There was another deal. The Americans, diplomats, had been working assiduously for months with the Turks and with the Kurds to create essentially a corridor whereby American troops with the Turks would patrol. This was all done. This was all agreed to. And Trump had no reason to essentially blow this deal up except to be nice to Erdogan.
What's your take, Aykan, with respect to if there could have been another way to forestall this Turkish offensive? Just as Henri Barkis said, they were negotiating, and now, in one phone call, it's blown up.
No, definitely, I think this could have been avoided on multiple fronts. First of all, let's think about how imminent the threat is. This part of the Turkish-Syrian border happened to be the most secure. So we shouldn't be repeating Erdogan's talking points. On the Turkish side, there is an impenetrable wall, very strict security. And on the Syrian side, the SDF has basically eradicated any armed jihadist activity. And for Turkey's own citizens, this part of the border was the safe part. In fact, for Turkey, the real threat came further to the west, in Idlib, where there are Al-Qaeda-affiliated organizations, as well as Turkish proxies. The second issue is there were mechanisms in place for providing further assurances to Turkey. And I think Washington has demonstrated again and again and again that it's willing to take further steps to assure Turkey. But not only Washington, the SDF, I think, has proven extremely open to providing assurances to Turkey. For example, pulling back their troops from the border, destroying their own fortifications, handing over heavy weapons, which shows remarkable flexibility from an umbrella organization that Ankara argues is hostile, is a terrorist organization. In fact, I think Turkey's own experience with the Kurdish militia within the SDF, namely the YPG, proves otherwise. In 2015, when Turkey carried out a cross-border operation to relocate an Ottoman shrine, the grandfather of the founder of the Ottoman Empire, YPG forces coordinated with Turkey, and YPG forces protected Turkish soldiers going in and out of Syria into Islamic State-held territory, which shows there could always be a different kind of modus vivendi brokered by the U.S.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Professor Henri Barkis. He's Cohen Professor of International Relations at Lehigh University and Senior Fellow for Middle East Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Aykan Erdemir, from whom you just heard. He's a former Turkish parliamentarian currently senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We're discussing the controversial withdrawal of U.S. troops from northeastern Syria. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. And a new VOA English app for both Android and Apple devices has been developed, and we encourage you to download them and use them. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out. Ems Ikongson Sr. from Uyo, Akwa Ibom State in Nigeria. And Ems has been an avid listener of VOA since the 1980s. Thank you so much for writing in. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter at voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, in the last 10 minutes, Henri, I want to sort of do a lightning round. Let's take a look at the withdrawal of the U.S. troops and the enabling of the Turks to go in and the Russians and Bashar al-Assad. What is the impact on the status of ISIS?
Well, there are two issues with ISIS. One is that ISIS was actually never defeated. And a lot of ISIS folks went underground and were waiting essentially for the right conditions to reemerge. And a weakened SDF and the absence of the Americans in northeastern Syria is precisely one of those conditions they're probably waiting for. And we've seen some minor ISIS activity already. But more importantly, the SDF, the Syrian Kurdish forces, have been holding some 12,000 seasoned ISIS warriors in prison, as well as 40,000 of their family members in camps. Now, these are prisons and camps that are run by the Syrian Kurds with no help from anybody. The Europeans give some money, but the United States doesn't. And the United States also expects the SDF to continue to hold these ISIS prisoners because nobody wants these ISIS prisoners to escape and wreak havoc both in the region, in Europe, and the United States. So there's a certain amount of duplicity, if you want, on the American position that essentially greenlights a Turkish invasion of Syrian Kurds and then at the same time expects the Syrian Kurds to continue to hold the ISIS prisoners. At some point, something will give.
Exactly. To move quickly, Aykan, I want to ask you a follow-up question regarding the Kurds themselves. Obviously, this is devastating to them. They saw their comrades in arms, the U.S. military, leaving, abandoning their camps. The U.S. troops were pelted with, you know, rotten fruit, and they were called traitors for having, you know, left them. But of course, these are U.S. soldiers. They were following orders. This must have been absolutely devastating. What's the fate now of the Kurds? I mean, they're on the run. How do you see the upcoming weeks and months for the Kurds?
I think Northeast Syria's Kurds, as well as other minorities, including, you know, the Yazidis and Syriac Christians, now they feel that they're between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, you know, their former partners, the Americans, have left them. From the north, they see increasing threats by the Erdogan government and his Syrian Islamist proxies. And then they see the reach out by Russia and the Assad regime. And I think, as one Syrian Kurd put it, now they have to pick the bad choice among the worst.
The lesser of two evils,
the lesser
Kurdish
of two evils. And so they are now turning to Russia and the Assad regime, knowing fully well that this is a long and gradual path of giving up their rights and freedoms, their relative autonomy. And I think they know fully well what awaits them, that ultimately Northeast Syria will converge into an autocratic regime, the kind we see around Damascus these days.
Turning to you, Henri, I'd like to get your take on where this leaves the Kurds. It seems as if they have no say in any of the agreements between Turkey and Russia. Turkey now wants to relocate one half of the 4 million Syrian refugees in the area that they once occupied. Some are warning of ethnic cleansing of Kurds. Do you see it that way? On the other hand, if Assad's forces move in, then those Syrian refugees may also be in peril.
Well, it's a good question. First of all, ethnic cleansing has taken place. You've seen tens of thousands, up to 200,000 Kurds and other minorities who have been kicked out of the area by Turkish troops and their jihadist allies. And people essentially are leaving with all their belongings. And the likelihood is that there will be more of that. So that in terms of, shall we say, international law, you've already seen ethnic cleansing. But the Turkish idea that you can actually implant Syrian refugees who may have come to Turkey from Aleppo or from Damascus into parts of Syria that are not their homeland, in places where there were other people who lived there before, is also against international law and is completely unacceptable. The Turks did it in Afrin when they invaded Afrin earlier in 2018, and the rest of the world essentially didn't say anything, so they think they can pull this off again. But as you pointed out, one of the things that maybe that the Turks did not plan on was for the Syrian, some of the Syrian military to come back into that region with the Russians, which means that a lot of those Syrians the Turks may want to move will probably resist and will not want to go into northern Syria.
Let me ask you, in terms of how significant a gain this is for Russia, what do they want from this even greater foothold that they now have in Syria?
First of all, the Russians have won on two different, shall we say, levels. One, they have essentially managed to deepen already an existing rift between Turkey, a NATO member, and the rest of the NATO alliance. Trump may think he's getting along with Erdogan, but within the United States, there's an enormous amount of anger at the Turks, and within NATO as well. So you have now essentially a problem between NATO and Turkey that is deepening. Secondly, the message that essentially Trump is helping Putin give is that Putin is a new gendarme, if you want, of the Middle East. If you want something done in the Middle East, don't bother calling the United States, call Moscow. And this is a message that every single country will be paying attention to, precisely because, you know, if the United States betrayed the Kurds with whom they had been fighting together so easily, imagine what the Saudis and the others must be thinking.
Well, that's a good point. So back to you, Aykan Erdemir. What's the reaction of the region to this increasing foothold by Russia, thanks to this Turkish incursion that the United States basically paved the way for? What do they want, the Russians, and how is the region reacting?
I think this is a major moment of transformation in the Middle East as countries begin to hedge their foreign and security policies. Even those countries which have traditionally invested with the U.S., have sided with the U.S., are seeing this as a moment which necessitates a pivot toward Russia to hedge their bets. As the U.S. is pulling out of the Middle East, and as the U.S. is proving itself to be an unreliable partner, an increasingly transactional partner that can abandon you overnight, I think countries in the Middle East and beyond have no choice but to hedge their bets. In fact, this might even mean finding new modus vivendi with Iran as well, because ultimately we will see Russia and Iran emerging as the new hegemons in the region, and with their client Assad also on the ascendancy. And although we have seen that the Arab League and others have opposed Turkey's incursion, with the exception of basically Hamas and Qatar, no one supported the Turkish incursion. Ultimately, all these other countries will have to gradually turn back to Russia.
For someone like you, who has been at the forefront of promoting religious freedom and democracy, this cannot be a good sign, the ascendance of Russia. It's going to simply reinforce these autocratic regimes, the likes of Bashar al-Assad, even Saudis, and others in the region, which can't be good for democracy, and that can't be good for the United States' national interests either.
Exactly, because if the Syrian Democratic Council model succeeded, if people of different ethnic and religious backgrounds managed to come together and put together an inclusive and participatory polity, this would have not only undercut Putin's authoritarian regime, Khamenei's authoritarian regime, but also Erdogan's authoritarian regime. I think all three regimes had the shared goal of making sure this democratic and inclusive model did not succeed.
On that dubious note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have. On this edition of the program, I'd like to thank my guest, Henri Barkey. He's Cohen Professor of International Relations at Lehigh University and Senior Fellow for Middle East Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Aykan Erdemir, former Turkish parliamentarian, currently Senior Fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your critical insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.